The following program may contain coarse language, violence, nudity, mature subject matter, or scenes which may not be suitable for all viewers. Viewer discretion is advised.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
Hi, John, are you there?
Yes, I am, Rob. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Thanks for joining us, John. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your amazing journey, and congratulations on all the awards you've won.
Thanks. They're collecting dust, and my wife says I have to put them in the attic or the IKEA bookcase will collapse and kill the cats.
Yeah, that's what my wife says too, so I understand where you're coming from, but I say, in our case, it's the dogs. The dogs go, the awards stay.
My cats. It's a self-esteem boost, but I was very lucky. First of all, I want to salute you for staying on the prowess for your program. I appeared a few times 15 years ago, 2007, 2006, and I believe 2004 in your program. So it's great to see that we're both kicking in there. I hosted a program called The Folklorist, which was a historical TV show. Essentially, mm-hmm. I'd do a stand-up narrative in period costume. We'd bring in actors around them.
Yeah.
We did various segments, including paranormal segments, which included the Dover Demon, an alien encounter in 1977 in Massachusetts, the Gloucester Sea Serpent. Allegedly, this monstrous sea serpent was seen in Gloucester, Massachusetts in 1816, 1817. Springheel Jack, a Victorian era man that breathed blue fire. Angel of Mons, World War I opening battle, where allegedly the British Expeditionary Force was surrounded and these angels appeared above them and scared off the Germans. What else? A couple of other segments that we did related to paranormal phenomena, but it was basically history-based, and we were very, very lucky to win many, many awards over it. And my favorite segment was probably Ape Canyon, which is the historic Bigfoot story, where these miners in 1924 were in a cabin at the base of Mount St. Helens, and allegedly these creatures that they really ticked off started pummeling them with boulders. So I've been around the block and back, and every day that you get up, Rob, is a good day. It's a win. So, and I've always been in the periphery of paranormal phenomena, and I'm starting to get back into it. I was back from the early 90s, pre-internet days.
Right.
I was in Roswell before the internet got going, got to interview some of the primary witnesses. I got involved with an area called the Bridgewater Triangle, which you talked about, the Great Lakes Triangle.
Yeah.
In our area, which has anomalous creatures, whether it's balls of light, UFOs, Bigfoot, giant mm-hmm. birds, giant snakes, giant cougars, giant dogs, and giant stories, a lot of hyperbole, exaggeration, and embellishment as well. So, but it's always fascinating.
Where did your interest come from, John?
Yeah, I guess starting In Search Of in the 70s.
Oh my gosh,
Yeah. And also those monsters, myth or magic movies, like in the early, when the Patterson Gimlin film, right, of 1967, October 67, that's what stimulated me. You know, four people have claimed to have been in an ape suit. I've met Bob Gimlin, and to this day, they still cannot disprove that. So I guess that's where it stems from. And of course, a UFO flap of 1966, I know when it was in Massachusetts, and I barely remember going out to my front lawn with my family. Seeing something. So
wow.
Yeah,
what's your take? I'm just going to go on a little bit of a sidetrack here and ask you about, what is your take on Skinwalker Ranch?
It creeps me out. I was really in there. Yeah, absolutely. And the studying, it's a portal. I think there's demonic presence there. There's alien presence there. I think that in Bigfoot research, you have the argument between the people who associate Bigfoot with UFOs and the flesh and blooders. Okay. And Skinwalker Ranch, Colm Kelleher's book, which came out 15, 16 years ago, where he said this ape-like creature emerged from like this light portal. Very strange, very odd. I believe there's the research that they're doing, and there's other portals like Skinwalker Ranch. Yeah.
You talked briefly about Bigfoot and the work that the investigations that you've done into Bigfoot. Tell us more about that. Is there any evidence?
Yeah, well, I can't believe in Bigfoot because I've never seen one, but I believe people have seen one. And I believe in the people who've seen one. And that there's, with more and more cameras out there, everybody has a camera going instantaneous. It's no longer the camcorder on your shoulder. They have drones too. And all of the strange footage is emerging. They're going deep into the bush. A guy by the name of Todd Standing, he's come back with this incredible footage. And people say hoax, hoax, hoax. And I'll be the first to take the opposite approach and to take the contrary approach and say, wait a minute. Hold off. I'm not sure yet. But they've been seen in remote areas, especially when the pandemic came and they shut everything down for essentially 3 months, whatever these things are, along with other wildlife, encroached into inhabited areas. So I believe there's certainly something to it. And this a litany of these stories go back to the 1800s. Of wild man encounters, Canada, for instance, Jacko, the abominable snowman, Edmund Hillary, he never came out and said it, but a lot of his guides, and Eric Shipton, who went up on Everest, had found these footprints. So there's something to it. I don't think you'll ever kill one. I don't think you'll ever capture one. I don't think you'll ever find bones of one, which because they're agile, they're quick, they have uncanny senses. And maybe, who knows, and I'm not smart enough to discuss this, but they're operating in another dimension that we can't understand. And maybe they've slipped through a time portal. My best story, I would say, if you have a second, here is I'm out in with John Green, who is the probably the knighted Bigfoot researcher from Harrison Hot Springs. I had an opportunity to stay in his house back in 1997 with Don Keating and go through his index files. And this guy comes in about 2 a.m. by the name Mike McDonald from Hamilton, Ontario. Steel worker. He had been reconnoitering a family of Sasquatches on Harrison Hot Springs Island, uninhabited island. He's just there. And he had come out of the bush because he was down to half a sleeve of saltines and out of food. But the story was the night before he came in was he had gone into his sleeping bag, zipped down, full moon. There was a boat dock down the hill, a family, a sailboat, a father, daughter, and wife. All of a sudden, he hears his footfall shaking him off the ground. Oh, my God. And he thinks it's a bear. He doesn't think he's out there looking for Sasquatch. He thinks it's a bear. He unzips his bag, gets his grizzly spray, counts to three, unzips it because he sees a silhouette lit by the moon outside his tent. Counts to three, unzips it, sprays the mace. The nozzle's pointed the wrong way. He maces himself. He runs out with in his underwear with the sleeping bag at his ankles, tumbles down a hill. Sasquatch, Sasquatch. The guy comes out of his boat with a gun. What are you doing? What are you doing? This is Sasquatch. Okay, kid, calm down. Take a couple of shots of whiskey. You're going to sleep here tonight. Guy goes up the hill, gets a sleeping bag, stay in the dock. So he's lying down. He's just getting calm and chilled. And he hears footfall on the bank. And then he hears this thing enter the water, he says. At that time, he was terrified, and he heard bubbles coming close. He relieves himself. He wets himself. And then he hears this scratching underneath his dock. Anyways, he said he didn't believe in God. He prayed and prayed and prayed, and then suddenly the thing went away, bubbles, and he had this musty smell. He heard it get out of the water and creep back up the hill. But that's the epitome Bigfoot story. And then the other one, I had a taxi cab driver call into this dispatcher, David Smith, and I got this in 1998. She's out dropping off a fare, gets lost on one of these old logging roads in southwest New Hampshire, turns around, does the three-point turn, backs into a tree, but it's not a tree, it's a furry torso. She has her red lights break. She sees a furry torso, and she says something grabbed the roof of the rack of her cab and ripped off the cab lights as she drove away. And when she came back, it almost was sardine canned when she came back. And then finally in the Bridgewater Triangle, the last one is there was a flap of Bigfoot sightings in December of 69 through the spring of 1970. People were finding footprints, hair, eating melons, pets going missing. So this police, they said enough. The Bridgewater police do a stakeout with one of their old Adam 12 cruisers. And he's sitting on a driveway of this house. And all of a sudden he feels the back of his cruiser being shaked. And we call this one the Bridgewater bumper shaker. Up and down. Again, he puts his foot in the brake, the red torso, the red lights of the hair, and he sees what he called a bipedal bear run around the house. Now, the only bipedal bear is Yogi Bear, right? Jellystone.
Right, yeah.
So those are the three that I can really reference right off the bat.
How do you think that Bigfoot has been able to elude the hunters, the investigators, the photographers all these years?
Well, the photographers, some of them got them. There are hoaxes out there. And you know, there's a tremendous pathology afflicting Western civilization and especially our content. They lie, then they lie about their lies, then they deny their lies, and then they accuse you and I of their lies. So yeah. There's just embellishment, as I said, hyperbole, exaggeration. But they have caught these unexplained images. Hunters have shot a point blank range. The thing turns over its shoulder, walks. They found blood droplets. So they claim footprints, scat droppings, but periphery evidence. They don't have anything hard. And one guy came out over 10 years ago with a body, and I called hoax before I even saw it. He had a rubber body. And there was a hoax back in 1967 called the Minnesota Iceman, where somebody claimed to have had the body of a Sasquatch. And again, here it is. We're in 2022. They're not going to find one. They're not going to catch one. So it's more and more people are claiming to see it. It's the big hit of the internet. You want viewers, all you got to talk is Bigfoot on the internet. So it's elusive.
John, we've got to take our first break. What is your website for our listeners that they can go and visit?
I have so many of them, but I guess that they could go to US Folklore, FOLKLORE.com. That would bring them to my portal of my historical lecturing.
John, stand by. Nice seeing you again. And once again, congratulations on all your awards and the great work you've done over the years.
Thank you.
Exo Nation, John and I will return on the other side of this break as the Exo continues with yours truly, Rob McConnell, from our broadcast center and studios in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Don't go away. Exo Nation, John Horgan is our special guest. USfolklore.com is the website. And John, over the years, you've spoken to many interesting people. One of the most famous UFO abduction cases, the Betty and Barney Hill case. And I understand that you actually had the opportunity of interviewing Betty Hill herself. What was that like?
Well, first of all, I went in unprepared to the interview. Paranormal researcher Lauren Coleman had set up an interview with Betty in September of 1999. And coincidentally, by the way, 62 years ago tonight, she first reported her sighting to Pease Air Force Base, September 21st, 1961. And I had lost the tapes for 10 years and found them in 2009, the VHS recording. And then in 2019, I found the super VHS recording. So if you go to YouTube and look at the lost Betty Hill interview, John Horgan, you'll find it. I've been ratioed by YouTube, so you'll have to dig for it. But essentially, she and her husband, Barney, September 19th, 1961, driving back from Montreal, Niagara Falls, along Route 3 through the White Mountains. They see a light. They pull the car over. Barney pulls out his binoculars, hears a voice in his head, stay right there. He's got a gun on him. They're terrified. They drive down the highway, hear a buzzing sound. Boom. They travel over 30 miles, missing time. They wake up and they're driving down, not talking to each other. They're regressed later by a hypnotist, Dr. Simon, in January of 1965. And they recount the horrifying encounter of being brought on board a spacecraft, probed, and had fluids removed, etc. Betty had a scorched dress. There were marks in their car. It was the seminal event of alien abduction. And when I interviewed her, she was cognizant, and she knew the UFO game very well. She claimed to have seen UFOs on demand. And when I first left there, I kind of scoffed at that. But now I'm backing off that there are some people that are more prone to encounter paranormal phenomena than others. When I was in Gulf Breeze, Florida, there was a major UFO sighting in 1997, but I missed it. I was there and I didn't see it. So, and somebody told me, you're not at the right vibrational rate. But Betty, you know, she was the one who, you know, they regressed her. Marjorie Fish made her make a star map. Okay. And they vetted that star map of where these entities came from. And if you listen to the experts, there's dozens of what I call space bugs out in the universe, and they can manipulate time, space, and light. And she was one of the first. And then since then, Bud Hopkins, who I had a chance to interview, he did extensive research in that. John Mack, Carpenter, who I guess is the was it Carpenter? I forget his first name, but he's the leading researcher now. And I believe these people, they're not making this up. Their lives were changed by this, and they have scoop marks found. They've had alien implants. found on them. The doctor recently passed away, who was the key of
Roger Lear.
Roger Lear.
Yeah.
Yep. So I believe in it. And I like to say, if you don't believe, I probably do. If you believe, I probably don't. I'm a contrarian.
Why do you think Betty and Barney Hill waited 4 years from 61 to 65 to bring their story forward?
Biracial couple, right? With in New England, and also scorn and ridicule. And there was no correlating, except for Adamski, George Adamski from the 50s, and she didn't know about that. There was no correlating story. People, their friends told them, you're insane, you're crazy. And then when they were regressed finally by Dr. Simon, and their stories matched up, and all that terror from that night came back. But they did. They called Pease Air Force Base again 62 years ago tonight, September 21st, 1961. And Pease
said 2 days after the event.
Correct. They didn't have, because it took them about a day and a half to recover. They were dazed and they had nightmares. And Pease said, no, we didn't have any aircraft in the area near Old Man of the Mountain in the White Mountains. And so they were puzzled, and they kept asking, they kept lecturing about it. There was an article in the newspaper. So it's not that they just came out with it. They had to find ears to listen to their story.
I have a few problems with that case, but
sure.
I guess everybody has questions that turn into problems.
There's no cookie cutter abduction account, Rob. Yeah. There's no, you know, they all just miss in meshing. Do you know what I'm saying? Five fingers, four fingers, right. Almond eyes, green, beige, red, you know.
There's no white consistency.
There isn't.
You know, and even today when you talk to Mike Rogers from the Walton Fire in the Sky,
Travis,
he's saying, well, nobody really saw it. Nobody in the crew saw Walton get abducted.
True.
You know, right. And then the fact that Walton says he's never failed a lie detector test is a false statement, because he did on TV. When you've got Mike Rogers saying that, nah, it was all about the money now. What does this do to not only the Fire in the Sky with Travis Walton, but the Betty and Barney Hill story, where, you know, it seems that there is starting to be a crack in the alien abduction scenario?
Well, first of all, I have to be careful about what I say about Travis. He's a friend of my wife's. Okay. I looked at this. I thought the movie was tremendous. I have to tell you that I haven't poked holes in Travis's story. I embrace it through my wife. But the alien abduction phenomenon, like you said, it was all the rage up until the late 1980s. And then when Bud passed, you know, about 13 years ago, 14 years ago, it just went... So,
you know, speaking about Bud Hopkins, Kevin Randall had his wife on his show, A Different Perspective, and she said Bud was a fake. He was a fraud. It was all a big act. So when you've got a wife saying that about somebody that is revered within the alien abduction world, and then you hear the cracking of the stories with between Travis Walton and Mike Rogers, it seems that more and more people are starting to say, well, you know what? We've got to take a better look at this. We've got to look at the evidence. And so where do we go from here?
Okay. I guess I didn't see the interview, it was Bud's ex-wife, not Leslie Kane, his partner when he died, right? Leslie Kane, as you know, big UFO researcher, and she's taken on Washington. But how can I say this? I don't have an ex-wife wife, and I'm thankful for that. But I'm sure that ex-wives are bittered, right? As our exes.
Yeah, they can be, but there are those cases where ex-wives and ex-husbands get along very well.
Yeah. And but why does she come out now when he's 10 years in the grave?
Maybe nobody's asked her before. Kevin did.
Okay. And I like Randall. Randall is top notch. Yeah. Randall is the best in the business.
Yeah. Roswell, New Mexico. Big story. That's the mecca for ufology. I know that you were there and you had the opportunity of meeting some rather encountering people and experiences that you had going back to, what, the 1990s?
You're right. I visited there 3 years in a row on 95, 96, 97. And I remember driving out in 97 saying, this is bollocks. And then I said to myself, you know, when they disclose, the government comes forward and discloses UFOs exist, which I think they did in December of 2017, nobody will care. It won't even make the news between weather and sports. Yeah. And when I was down there the first time, Randall had just released, or he was the truth about the UFO crash at Roswell, and you know, him and Schmidt split off.
Yeah,
but I got to talk with Kevin extensively, Don Schmidt extensively, and that's kind of like Simon and Garfunkel breaking up, in my opinion, and each saying this. But there were so many men that backdated themselves into the story that really made it go bad. Ragsdale, that's bollocks, okay? Frank Kaufman, come on, stop it. And then when I talked to Glenn Dennis, and I had this feeling, and I interviewed him, this guy's lying. He's not telling the truth. You know, he was the mortician, little bodies.
Yep.
So and then Frankie Rowe, crying on demand. My grandfather saw the bodies. And as Randall will tell you, they still don't have the alien bodies. We have talk of the alien bodies. Yep. Four fingers, five fingers, six fingers, four bodies, three bodies, two alive, one alive, three dead, four dead. Corn ranch in the side of the ranch. They had the debris field. And I can tell you the debris field happened. I walked out on the deep debris field in 1994 with an archaeologist. And when we went into Roswell, the first, they had two museums. The first one had a tiny X right in that land. And I said, take me there. We went out and he dug up some strange metallic things. And he gave me a few pieces and I've lost them. But I believe in the debris field. I also think that Brazel discovered that not on July 4th, in mid-June. If you look at the original testimony of the Bill Moore book of 1980, right? And I know Bill Moore's got his warts too. But when he collaborated, I think it was with Friedman, right? Or Bill, I forget who it was. But he talks about mid-June, even preceding the Kenneth Arnold event of June 24th, 1947. So Roswell, if you notice, 75 years just passed a couple of months ago, it went away with a whimper. And that's the way we should do Roswell. It's time to quit Roswell. Randall was great. Schmidt was great. But nothing will come forward from Roswell.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. There is one major bone of contention that I have with the entire Roswell story. That's when Jesse Marcel, the base intelligence officer, leaves the base, goes to the debris field, takes debris, and as soon as he takes that debris, he's retaining the custody for the case. But instead of going right back to the base with the maintaining the chain of custody, what's he do? He goes home and lets his kid play with it. That makes no sense to me. Right then and there, the story's dead.
Yeah, but Jesse Marcel Jr., high integrity guy, okay? And I know he's passed, but I got to talk with him, and he was consistent, you know, the I-beams and the different markings. But here's my theory. Walter Hout, if you look at that press release, it's a joke. A flying saucer landed. It's being stored on a ranch. Who could, you know, back then, it's like a game of telephone, children's game. He was picking up phones, Hout, left and right, and somebody was asking him questions. Yeah. He put that into the story. But I bet you Butch Blanchard with a cigar in his mouth said, hey, put out a press release. They found a flying saucer outside Corona in the ranch, Mac Brazel. And that's it. And he walked away. And everything else was Walter Hout. Everybody else got promoted. So did Marcel. But Hout got drummed out of the military a year and a half later, okay, with no accolades. But I think he brought this story. He embellished it. He brought it down. And all these phone calls came in with the headline. Ramey had to retract it. I think they flew the debris to Wright Field in Ohio and also Fort Carswell in Texas. But it was Hout who came up with that ridiculous story of a flying saucer captured intact and landed at a ranch. That was Hout's writing, nobody else's.
I know that based on the date of July 4th, was it July 4th, the original crash date that was out there? A lot of research has been done on the mogul theory. And according to all the research that has been done on that date, there were no mogul flights. However, has anybody ever gone to the date in June that you told us about, June the 10th, to check the mogul flight records back then?
That's a good one, Rob. There you go. Yeah. That could be. And, you know, it depends on what day of the week. If it's a weather balloon, because it just reads like a weather balloon, doesn't it? The debris.
Sure does.
It reads like a weather balloon or a Rawin target balloon, or as you said, Project Mogul, which is top secret. Yeah. Listening to Soviet detonations of nuclear weapons in 1947, and you're just outside the only nuclear wing in the world, the most powerful and deadly wing in the world at Roswell. If, put it this way, if it came down, it came down at the right place, just outside of White. White Sands Proving Ground, near Trinity Site. And I often think Trinity Site was July 16, 1945, in almost 2 years to the day Roswell happens. So were these entities 2 light years away, or were they on patrol 2 years away? I always thought about that because they were tracked by nuclear weapons, rocketry, and I think radio signals. One of my theories is Jack Benny's radio show, the biggest broadcast ever coming off of Earth. The first one was in December of 1932, I believe. So Jack Benny has passed 300 stars already, but I'm just wondering if that radio signal went out there as if a Horton hears a who, we are here, we are here, and that attracted them. Who knows, you know?
Oh, my goodness. But what about the guy who kind of started all this, Kenneth Arnold?
I believe him. You know, saucers skipping across water. There was a spate. If you look at the historical record of after June 24th, 1947, Arnold's sighting, and all the strange things, the Maury Island that led up to Roswell, there were things darting about the atmosphere. Boom, 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 boom. And again, it's as if flies got in the house, right? The wind, somebody left the screen open and there were moths in the house, but everybody's seeing them. There's reports of Roswell on July 2nd. And of course, a massive rainstorm strikes the night of the 4th. And I actually experienced one the night of the 4th in 1997 on the 50th anniversary. But the thing that they don't talk about, Rob, have you heard about Barney Barnett, the Plains of San Augustine, right?
No.
An alternate crash site. Well, that's interesting. It's in the original Moore Friedman book of 1980. And I like to go to the original sources. Barney Barnett was worked for the government, a soil conservationist engineer out near Socorro in this salt flat called Plains of San Augustine. He apparently came up upon, again, crash saucer, archaeologists then come in. There's dead bodies everywhere. Then the army says, swears them to secrecy or we'll kill you. And then that's taken and moved to the Hart Canyon episode, which I don't believe in, Aztec, and some other flying saucer encounters. So either you have no flying saucer crashes or multiple. You can't have one. You can't. And, you know, they can't come halfway across the galaxy and then crash into a side of a mountain outside of Roswell. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But is the Barney Barnett story.
Is it possible that Kenneth Arnold's story was, I'm not doubting the validity of what he says he saw, but is it possible that what he actually saw was military aircraft?
I mean, there are military bases out there, you know, in that area.
We do know that there are bases in the sides of mountains that they actually have. We know that this isn't a conspiracy or a cover-up.
But this Arnold, he seemed like just the facts, ma'am, type of guy, down to earth, experienced pilot, just didn't seem prone to lying, didn't like all of the press that was upon him.
I'm not saying he was lying. I'm not saying he's lying about
he misidentified what he something.
Thinks he saw. Yeah, exactly.
In the squadron, yeah. I guess the speeds that they were traveling and the formation, though, for us to put that many jets up at that time in formation without a sound, you got to remember the jets that we had flying. Do we even have F-86s back then? They're so loud, right, with the afterburners that you would have heard them and they would have left some sort of contrail
it also depends on how far away they were. It depends on what altitude they were at.
True, but he had the chevron shaped, you know, that wing.
You know, a lot of these UFO stories, in my opinion, do not get the information from the military that people are hoping for because the military doesn't want to share the information. And I can understand it. There's need to know. And do we need to know what the military is up to at all times? I don't think so.
Because I agree.
I also think that many times ufologists actually push the limits further than they should.
I agree 100%. We don't need to. I agree. You and I are on the same page with this. Don't wag your finger at the military. If there are UFOs, 5% they can't explain. You bet they keep them close to the vest because if the Soviets got a hold of that technology and back engineered it, that puts it at us a tremendous disadvantage in terms of speed and maneuverability. So, yes, absolutely, they would keep it close to the vest.
John, you and I have to take a break. Please stand by. And Exo Nation, if you'd like to get more information about our guest this hour, John Horgan, visit his website, usfolklore.com. We'll be back after the short break. Don't go away. John Horgan's our guest. usfolklore.com is the best site to go and find out all about what this gentleman does. And John, I also understand you've been to Area 51. Tell me, did you see any crashed UFOs? Did you see any aliens? What did you see?
Camo dudes chasing our butts out of there. What we did is four of us went out there January of 1994. Uh-huh. Little alien, couple of beers and us, and the little alien down Mailbox Road, right? We breached the sign. So in theory, we were on the base because they went and they seized the land that we were on towards Freedom Ridge. They chased us out. We broke an axle, had to drive 30 miles back to Las Vegas, and we were lucky we didn't get arrested. Did we see anything? No. Did we see the glow of the base? Just barely. You have a better chance of seeing Area 51 sitting on the right side of an airplane from Denver to Albuquerque than you do trying to sneak in. So it was terrifying. We almost got caught and I saw nothing. And my question about Area 51, Rob, is what are they doing there now? Okay. It's been 30 years since the flying saucers, right? Where are they? You know, they got drones, I guess. And I know they fly Russian aircraft there when they play the Red Hat games.
Yeah.
Although, I'm just wondering, has it been moved to Hill Air Force Base in Nevada outside of Dugway Proving Grounds, or what are they actually doing there? And of course, you've heard Lazar with the S4 story as well.
What's your take on Lazar?
I think it's fascinating. He's been regurgitated. You know, this is his third coming now, right? And yeah. I think it's Jeremy Lockyer Corbell. I just, they can't shoot him down. He's still on the saddle. In his story, still holding water, there are guys that came out and said, yeah, I saw him there. I think it's valid in his videos that I saw, and I think there's something to it. Recently, I saw a story about some archaeologist wandered into S4. Did you hear about that? Back in the 90s, he came in from the West, and he'd hide during the day and travel at night, and he allegedly saw some garage door opening in the hills of S4, right, Section 4, and he saw some sort of bright light inside there. So I think there's something to it. My father died 2 days ago, so I can tell you this. I'm going to tell you a story now.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. He was with the military intelligence, would fly out to Nellis Air Force Base. And the story he told me is when they brought out the craft onto the tarmac is they knew when the Russian satellites were coming overhead, and they pulled them back into the garage, wait for the recce birds to fly over, and then bring the hardware back out and fly them. So I know that there was, he worked on stealth, the F-117 there, B-2, etc. So I know for a fact that they were doing advanced military aircraft out there, and they were certainly cognizant of Russian satellites flying over.
Exactly. They were also doing a lot of work on the Apollo mission. We've had T.D. Barnes on, a former contractor for the CIA that worked at Area 51 and S4, and he says there are no UFOs there. There are no aliens. The only aliens that are though are the Mexicans that work for the government.
Yeah. Huh. But again, it's all speculation. Mm-hmm. It's conjecture until you see one, just like Bigfoot, right? Yeah. And somebody told me they saw one. I've never seen one. I don't want to see one. I've never seen a UFO. I don't want to see a UFO.
You don't?
No, then I'd have to go back in, and I'm OCD. I'd go down the rabbit hole too deep, and there's other things, and I'm afraid of that, going down the rabbit hole. I really exercised myself from ufology at the end of the 90s, and I'm just putting my toe back in the water now. But with the internet, and there's just so much garbage out there.
There is.
The people that don't know. And then you get guys like Randall, who's top notch with me. I like Schmidt and Carey. Yeah. I like Stan. Stan passed away, as you know. Guys like Don Ledger, Chris Stiles from Shag Harbor, Stan right. Gordon from Kecksburg. Those are the guys that I really like, the UFO researchers. And then the guy down, Stephen, who's the one trying to attract UFOs? Stephen, the Dr. Greer. I admire him for doing that, but.
Yeah, he's in I think he comes from a different planet than most of us, but
I'm from outer space as well, so who am I to talk?
You were talking about Shag Harbor, October the 4th, 1967. Have you been there, and what is your take on what really happened?
Yeah. Well, I got to know Don Ledger and Chris Stiles, who wrote the seminal book on the Shag Harbor incident. And you've heard of USOs, unidentified submarine or submerged objects. The ocean's a great place to hide, okay? And there's been countless reports from ships, whether they be military or just fishing craft, have seen lights come out and fly up. But the story says that on that evening of October 4th, 1967, Shag Harbor, which is on the southern tip of Nova Scotia, residents there, some kids partying, they see this aircraft go in the water. They think an airliner's crashed. Royal Canadian Mounted Police go down and investigate. They get fishing boats out there within the next 3 hours. Some of them describe this yellow foam on the surface of the water coming up to the side of their ship. Then the Royal Navy throws divers down there. We thought that they just went down, came back up. Now we're learning they were there for several days. Their reports saying they were rotating lives, a huge round craft. Some have reported unofficially underneath the water. Then it moved off at an incredible speed offshore and then flew up and out. And of course, it was at the tripwires. This is SAC, Strategic Air Command, some very sensitive waters to probe for Soviet submarines. This is the first picket, right, to detect if Soviet submarines were incurring into North Atlantic waters. So they picked the right area to be around with super sensitive underwater radar. And then the story dies after that. And I think dark skies, is it dark? Water, just look up Chris Stiles, Styles, or Don Ledger, Ledger, for their book. Fabulous read. Yeah.
Another interesting case that happened and has fallen off the radar is Kecksburg.
Yeah. There's three schools of Kecksburg. December 9th, 1965, something plummets into the center of Kecksburg in this valley, this wooded area. And there's three schools. Some say nothing happened. Some say it was a Soviet satellite. Others say it was an acorn-shaped UFO. Army, cordons off the area, shh, or something will happen to you. They put it in a flat bag, throw a tarpaulin on it, truck it out of there. It doesn't correlate with a Soviet satellite that re-entered the atmosphere earlier that day. But have you had Stan Gordon on your show before, Rob?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Oh, he's awesome. One of my favorites. Yeah. Stan's awesome. And he heard it on the radio that night. He's in western Pennsylvania. And there was a fervor there. And then, of course, the next day it goes and it's gone. And I was there the 50th anniversary the 40th anniversary of it. And people were still fighting that were there. Nothing happened. Oh, no, it was a Russian satellite. It was a UFO. And they were standing up and yelling at each other. So we really, know what. Oh, yeah. It divided families. And I remember walking down into the area, and it was creepy parking my car and coming back. And then a police officer like this, what are you doing here? You can't park here. Just basically get out. Go to your conference and go home.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating story about something that crashed, and to this day we don't know what it was. You'd think that they'd come forward. It's been this is 65, 47 years now? Did I do the math right? 57 years since that time. They'd come out and say, hey, it was a Soviet satellite, or we still don't know what it is. So until they come forward, we have to side with we still don't know what it was.
We have to take our final break. Don't go away. Welcome back, everyone. John Horgan's our special guest. USfolklore.com is his website. First of all, John, thanks very much for coming on. I hope that this is going to be as long a period in time as your last visit with us.
Hopefully not.
We were talking about the Roswell, and the anniversary. What would Roswell, New Mexico be without the UFO crash of 1947?
What would ufology be without Roswell? So I think the question.
Yeah,
big hit, big hit. Because that now flying saucer crashes, conspiracy, cover up, alien bodies. And now we know that there's more BS there than on a pig farm or cattle ranch. That's why we went by, because there's nothing more to talk about with Roswell. And anybody that says comes forward with information, you're lying, or your great great uncle said something like that. It's time to move on and show me another UFO crash. Show me more UFO crashes, and you can't.
Well, let's see, Levelland, Corona,
Levelland egg, the Barney Barnett and the crash of Corona. Stan Friedman, I have to say, Stan mixed up two stories or wove them together, and the Barney Barnett story still holds water for me, but. Levelland Egg, 1950s, the Hart Canyon. I need more data than that. It's too coincidental. Archaeologists, military comes in, swears you to secrecy or will kill you, carts off the debris. It's almost like Kecksburg in the desert. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Where's the beef?
That's right. Where's the data? Where are the bodies?
Exactly. What about the San Luis Valley?
Well, the San Luis Valley in Colorado, yeah. Cattle mutilation, it begins in 1967 when a horse called Snippy, male or female, I think it's female, is found mutilated. Its alimentary canal, esophagus down to its anus, is exanguated. That is pulled out. The horse is flat. All the blood and organs removed. Mm-hmm. And ranchers, and it's, you opened up the show with Skinwalker. They found mutilated cattle. And of course, they're associated with black helicopters, silent helicopters, UFOs and lights. Some people speculating that these space bugs, they need the nutrients and the enzymes from the cattle, or it's a government experiment for bad cow disease. But I got to interview Chris O'Brien, who is, I consider to be the foremost authority on cattle mutilation. He has two great books, Enter the Valley, and the first one was The Mysterious Valley. And all these ranchers, these guys are just trying to get by, okay? And they find their cattle dead. Some people try to blame it on cult activities, but the laser precision of the surgery, you know, is Dr. DeBakey out there in the 1960s and 70s as a hobby, you know, carving out these animals with precision, draining them of blood, no footprints, just lights. It's bizarre. It's weird. And it's still happening to ranchers in Canada and the Central Plains. It's bizarre.
One thing I can't understand is, if this has an alien connection, why in the name of God would the aliens have to keep on doing this to the cattle? All they need to do is take the DNA samples, and if they are real, and if they do, you know, cross time and space, they could easily regenetically build a cow. They don't have to go back and forth like, all right, let's go down to Earth. Hey, Sam, do you like Catalinas? Well, we're going to go down there. We'll get you a dozen or two for you to munch on. Like, it makes no sense.
You're right. They could clone it if they have this advanced technology. And my thought was maybe they have their own little Noah's Ark, right? They're only intergalactic. We need a Hereford. We need one with a white spot. We need a female or whatever. And they're somehow cloning these. Or Meltar, I need a snack. Let's go get a cow. And they land down and they put the straw in. All right, take off. You know, so who knows? It's still happening. And these ranchers, these poor ranchers, they're the guys that get screwed. They're the guys who lose these $500,000 prize cattle dead. And if you look at the Skinwalker Ranch, it's peppered with stories of cattle mutilation in and around that ranch as well. So it's still unsolved. I don't know if it's still going on though, Rob, or if it's sporadic, but it certainly was going on in the 70s and 80s. And of course, people were wagging their finger at the U.S. government.
Well, of course, if you can't prove it's a UFO, if you can't prove it's a conspiracy, if you can't prove it's a cover-up, you've got to blame the government. Come on.
That's right.
All right, my final question to you, my friend, before we have to say so long, is the footage that was released showing the underwater object, or the Tic Tac.
Oh, yeah. I think it's real. It's authentic. It's a USO. You know, move on. I don't know what it is. I don't know where they come from. But yeah, that's disclosure. Disclosure is come and gone, in my opinion. And deal with it. You know, I got to say, Rob, if we're driving fossil fueled vehicles and we're the cutting edge of the technology in the universe, what a pathetic universe it is.
John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, sir. My remark was it's a pathetic universe if we have to rely on fossil fuel technology, if that's the cutting edge. So,
well, especially if this reverse engineering theory is real. Another question is, if reverse engineering is real, and I don't think it is, to the extent that certain people in the UFO field believe it is, why are we still sending rockets to Mars? Why are we still sending rockets to the moon? Wouldn't we have the ability to use their engineering in order to get us from here to there in a Jetson mobile?
Exactly right. Bending space, time, and light, a portal. And that we're still lighting candles, right? Light that candle, shoot it up with rocket fuel. It's pathetic. And you're seeing that we see every other month one explode on a launch pad. They still haven't optimized that technology, if they indeed have it, which I don't think they have.
You and I have to say so long for tonight, my friend. Please let our listeners know how they can reach you.
Yeah, then go to usfolklore.com or go to YouTube and look up The Folklorist, and you can see all the videos at New TV, NEWTV.
Take care of yourself, John, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, peace
be with you. Exonation. All right, buddy. Nano, nano, Shazbot. There we go. Hey, I just thought of something. Doesn't the Tic Tac look like the egg that Mark came from? So now we know.
Another show on another day, my friend.
Take care of yourself. Be well.
Take care.
All right, Exonation. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break at the top of the hour as we continue here in the Exone. Coming up next, Dr. Craig Hogan will be with us. And then in our final hour tonight, Ralph Ellis. I'm Rob McConnell. This is the Exone. Don't go away.